switching to A from A code to testing GR. And in my talk for the first part, I would like to explain what we have learned in terms of strong field nature of gravity, mostly focusing on the in-spiral part of the waveform. And for the second part, I would like to explain what we can learn in terms of quantum black hole from this ring down part of the waveform. So let me begin by the in-spiral part of the waveform. So the question is, what can we test in terms of strong field nature of gravity? And well, one thing you can do is you can look for violations in fundamental aspects of general relativity. For example, general relativity was established under four-dimensional space-time, so you can look for presence of tiny extra dimension hidden in the data, or you can check for the violation of equivalence principle. You can check whether there's some preferred direction in your space-time which violates Lorentz invariance. You can also check for the presence of pseudo-scalar field that's coupled to metric, which will violate parity invariance in the gravity sector. You can also check whether gravitons are massless as predicted by GR by looking at the propagation speed of gravitation waves. And also you can check for additional polarization modes like scalar and vector polarization modes. And for the last part, Katrina will talk about this in more detail later this afternoon. So I would like to focus on the remaining five. And so going back now to test violations of such fundamental aspects of GR, what you need to prepare first is some template waveform that can capture deviation away from GR. And there are many framework to do so. We here picked one framework called parameterized post-Einsteinian formalism proposed by Nico Younes and Franz Pretorius. The idea is quite simple. This is a schematic picture of in-spiral waveform in GR in red and in certain modified theory of gravity in blue. And you can see that what you typically find is this deviation in the phase. So your task is to capture this deviation in the phase. And for that, for the in-spiral part of the waveform, you can just take the GR prediction and add one correction term that captures the non-GR effect. Here, V corresponds to the relative velocity of two objects inside your binary system. And this correction term has two parameters, beta and n. Beta is called PPE parameter, and this tells you the overall magnitude of this non-GR correction, whereas this n exponent here tells you at which post-Newtonian order this leading correction enters in the waveform. Let me remind you that post-Newtonian approximation is done assuming that the relative velocity is much smaller than the speed of light. So here you can see that I only include the leading post-Newtonian correction. On the other hand, for the merger and ring down part of the waveform, we kept them as predicted by GR. So we don't include any correction. And that's because we currently lack enough number of simulations, binary black hole merger simulations done in theories other than GR. So we don't really know how things look like in this merger and ring down part of the waveform. So to be conservative, we only include correction in this in-spiral part of the waveform. And now you have this template waveform that can capture deviation in away from GR. What you need to do is you take this template and then you cross-correlate against the data and see how accurately you can measure this deviation, or if there's no sign of a deviation, how what is the upper bound that you can place on this PP parameter beta. As you can see, if you set beta to zero, then you recover GR waveform. For us, we took somewhat simpler approach. We did not use actual data, but we used the injection signal whose waveform is consistent with GR with parameters that are reported by LIGO and VARGO collaboration for, let's say, the first event. And we tried to recover that signal consistent with GR with this PP modified waveform that has additional information according to this correction term in the phase. So I do include this PP parameter beta and also other GR parameters like masses and spins. So we do take into account correlations between this non-GR parameter and also other masses and spin, those binary parameters. And I'll jump on to the result. This is the plot showing the upper bound on PP parameter beta as a function of at which post-Newtonian order the leading correction enters. If you go down, it means you're placing stronger bounds in terms of non-GR effect. And this dashed black curve is the bound obtained from using double binary pulse observation, while green crosses are the ones obtained by the LIGO-Evago collaboration using actual data using full Bayesian analysis. And they obtain bounds on the positive post-Newtonian correction side. Whereas we used a simpler Fisher analysis and we did not use actual data, the results are shown by these red dots, and you can see that by comparing red against green, the our simpler Fisher analysis is as an order of magnitude estimate valid with the actual full Bayesian analysis. And we wanted to extend the result all the way down to negative post-Newtonian side. If you use, so these are the first event. If you use the second event, then you get even stronger bounds in terms of beta. So now, great, we have some bounds on this generic PP parameter beta that captures non-GR effect. But what is the physics that we learn from this plot? One thing you can learn is that by looking at different post-Newtonian order, you can look for violations of different fundamental aspects in GR. For example, if you focus on this minus 1 PN correction, then what you can look for is the presence of scalar charge activated on each black hole. And if such scalar charge are activated, that means you have a scalar dipolar radiation, and that produces this minus 1 PN correction. Now, if you have those scalar charges, that means there's a scalar force acting on two black holes, and this field violates equivalence principle. So by looking at this term, you can look for violations in equivalence principle. And in a similar manner, you can look for the presence of extra dimension, or you can check whether gravitational constant is actually constant or not. You can also check for the presence of the preferred direction in your spacetime, and you can also check for the presence of pseudo-scalar field coupled to the metric. So this is how you can extract different violations in different fundamental aspects of GR from the gravitational waveform that LIGO and Evago collaboration found. Now let me try to compare these new bounds against other bounds coming from solar system experiments or binary pulse observations. And for that, I'm going to show you some summary table. I'm going to show you each example theory that violates at least one fundamental pillar in GR. And this column will show you the actual bound coming from the first gravitational wave event, while the last column will show bounds coming from observations other than gravitational waves, like, as I said, solar system experiments or binary pulse observations. And here is the example of the first class, where these theories violate equivalence principle or parity invariance. And I don't show any bounds coming from gravitational wave events. And that's because the bounds obtained by using this system are too weak that it went beyond certain approximations that were used to obtain the deviation away from GR in the phase. In other words, we could not obtain any meaningful bounds on these types of theories from gravitational wave events. On the other hand, there are some theories where you can put meaningful bounds. Those are examples of a Lorentz violating series or extra dimension series. And if you compare the numbers, if the numbers are smaller, that means you are placing stronger bounds. And you can see that gravitational wave bounds, these numbers are much larger than the bounds coming from other observations. So these gravitational wave bounds are much weaker than other bounds, but they have meaning in the sense that they are the first bound obtained in the strong and dynamical field regime of gravity. And the third class of theories that you can check for is the theories where graviton dispersion relation gets modified. So in GR, the dispersion relation for the graviton is just E squared equals B squared. Yes?
So does that mean that you're putting a bound I'm looking at the Randall Sundrum scenario. Is this a 10 to the 10?
Yes, micrometers. Yeah, so very, very weak. And that's because this bound, this correction enters a minus 4 post-Newtonian order, which means that if the binary separation is larger, you have more advantage of having a larger effect. So that's why binary pulsar, for example, places strong bounds, or tabletop experiments place strong bounds.
Weak or strong?
Strong, yes. And for the last class of series, you can check for the violation of this graviton dispersion relation away from GR, like mass of gravity, and LIGO-VAGO collaboration already placed bounds on the mass of the graviton, which turned out to be 3 times stronger than the bounds coming from solar system experiments. And there are other theories that predict violation in graviton dispersion relation. And for example, there are some theories in which you have some parameter space, and then these gravitational wave events allowed us to place for the first time in some subregion in the parameter space, which could not be probed in other observations like cosmic ray observations. So in that sense, so in this propagation modification sector of GR, these gravitational wave events have placed very interesting bounds. And one important message here is that remember that I only included correction in the inspiral part of the waveform. So if we have some information about non-GR effect in margin ring down part of the waveform, then we should be able to get a stronger bounds. So now I'll move on to ring down part of the waveform. And I would like to just concentrate on one model, quantum black hole model, and that's called a collapsed polymer proposed by Remy Brustein and Medved. And for the details of this model, please wait for Remy's talk on Friday. Here I just prepare one slide, summary slide, trying to convey the overall picture and basic idea of what a collapsed polymer is. So imagine you take a black hole whose interior is of course vacuum, but instead of having vacuum interior, you fill the interior with a long and close excited interacting strings like this picture. And in this model, this is motivated from string theory, and string theory has a fundamental string scale. Let me denote it by LS. So you can imagine conceptually that you have this long string, but you can decompose this long string into string bits, where each bit has lengths of this fundamental string length LS. And you might wonder where this word polymer came from in chemistry or biology language. So you can think of this string bit as a monomer. And since this long string is composed of a repetition of these string bits, you can consider this long string as polymer, meaning that this made up of these string bits. So that's where this polymer word came from. And the key point in this model is that you have this characteristic length scale LS. So the dimensionless coupling constant that characterizes this model is given by the ratio between the Planck length scale and also the string length scale. Sorry. And this model, the surface is located slightly outside of the Schwarzschild radius. So you have the Schwarzschild radius here, and the surface is located slightly away from Schwarzschild radius. And the difference between the location of the surface and the Schwarzschild radius is proportional to this coupling constant. So what is the typical number for this coupling constant? It depends on what kind of model you pick, but if you want your theory to have a unification between gravity and gauge theory, then apparently you have this coupling constant squared to be something like 0.5. So this coupling constant is not necessarily like Planck suppressed. It could be of order unity, and that's because you have two length scale, Planck scale and string length scale, and both can be very small. So that's why you can have order unity correction. And again, please wait for Remy's talk for more details. But in my talk, I would like to see how this model produces additional ring down modes, because now you have internal structure which can produce matter oscillation modes that's encoded in the waveform. You do have usual space-time ring down mode, but on top of that, you can have some oscillation modes that can be longer lived. This is a schematic example of how such additional ring down modes look like in polymer in green and the usual black hole ring down in red. And you can see that typically what you find is that you have smaller amplitude, lower frequency, and longer lived additional oscillation mode. And the actual scaling between this polymer quantities and black hole quantities are given in this form. For example, the amplitude is suppressed relative to the black hole ring dance mode to this coupling constant to force power.
These are not echoes.
These are not echoes. This is just a ring down, but I think this can produce echoes if
no.
it's no?
No,
no. No, it cannot. Okay. But wouldn't this have a light ring? And if you have light ring, then wouldn't this produce echoes?
This is the smallest. It produces echoes.
Yeah, this can absolutely
no.
produce echoes.
No.
No,
because
I will explain. It's his model, so
you
can do whatever
you want. But there's a general argument why it's true then. Because if this object has a large entropy, mm-hmm. then this means that this is going to absorb mm-hmm. almost everything that falls
I
because
see.
Of entropic reason, because of phase space reason.
So I see, so there's no reflection.
That itself works. Yes. So there is an arrival here, right?
Yes.
It's just
Roberto
else.
Described it to
I see. Well, it's good that I learned new things. okay, so there's no echo, and we just consider ring down. And if you look at the spectrum, then it looks like this. So these black curves are the noise sensitivity curve for O1 on the top and design sensitivity on bottom. And the red one is the gravitational wave spectrum for this additional oscillation mode ring down, where I set this coupling constant to be unity. And in that case, amplitude, frequency, and damping time are exactly the same as the black hole case. So, and if you lower the coupling constant, then you have lower amplitude and lower frequency and narrower band corresponding to larger damping time scale. Now, let me give some order magnitude estimate of the expected signal-to-noise ratio if such additional oscillation mode is present for GW501914. This is the expected signal-to-noise ratio for this additional oscillation mode as a function of this coupling constant. And for example, if you assume the ground unification theory, then the expected coupling constant lies here. So the expected signal-to-noise ratio is somewhere between 2 and 3. So it will be difficult to detect such an oscillation mode. If you set the threshold to be 5, then you can put up. And if you assume that there is no such signal in the data, then you can place up a bound on the dimensionless coupling constant to be some number. But again, this should be taken as order magnitude estimate. The message here is that you can already look for the region which is predicted by ground unification theory. And if you have advanced LIGO design sensitivity in future, then you can do even better. This is the expected upper bound that one can place on dimensionless coupling constant as a function of the total mass of your black hole system. Ground unification prediction lies here. And for example, if you have some event that's similar to GW501914, where the total mass is 65, then you can place up a bound on this coupling parameter to be something like 0.35. So maybe in future you can rule out this ground unification model. So to conclude, for the inspiral part of the waveform, you can obtain some rather weak bound in violations in fundamental aspects of GR, but they have meaning in the sense that they're the first bound obtained in a strong and dynamical field regime of gravity. Regarding the test of a quantum black hole, you can, in future, look for this collapse polymer model, for example, and you may be able to rule out or say something about this ground unification coupling constant. And some caveats are that, especially for this inspiral part of the waveform test, I only included the leading correction in terms of post-Newtonian order. So it would be important to also derive higher OPN corrections and make sure that the bounds we obtained are conservative bounds. And these higher post-Newtonian corrections won't cancel out the leading post-Newtonian corrections. And also, it would be important to have a non-GR parameterized waveform, including the margin ring down part of the waveform. And to do so, you need to have lots of black hole binary simulations done in non-GR theories. But to do that, you need to make sure that your theory is well posed so that you can put onto computer. So I know many people working on this reaction. And also, for both cases, it's important to use actual data and see what we can say in terms of like negative post-Newtonian corrections and also these kind of quantum black holes. And that's all. Thank you very much for your attention.
Upper limit of the gravitational mass less than 10 to the minus 22. So I saw there's recently some measurement from that, from the neutron star merging event. How do you compare your result with the with the electromagnetic counterpart?
I think they obtained somewhat similar, but the bound obtained from obtained with the first event assumes that it has a frequency dependence in the propagation speed of gravitational waves. If there's no frequency dependence, then you cannot put such stringent bound because it will degenerate with time of coalescence of time of phase at the time of coalescence. So there's some difference.
But with the EM counterpart measurement, then there should be some new EM.
Yeah, yeah. I think the numbers were somewhat similar, 10 to minus 22 EV, if you map that to a graviton mass,
I think. Plus C minus bound.
Right, right, yeah. C plus will be 10 to minus 15. Yeah, C minus, it won't be affected.
Any modified gravity theory which you consider to satisfy the solar system data to 1 power 10 to the 5. So you expect the binary pulsar to be equally accurate, close to GR for the modified gravity theory. It's not until you get to the merger that you expect such a modified gravity theory to really do something. So,
yes.
The whole issue about it's not worth considering modified gravity theories which don't satisfy the binary pulsar data, which is very accurate.
Yes, that's right. The reason why, so this weak bound, tells you that. The binary pulsar and solar system experiments have already placed very stringent bounds on these theories. So, yeah.
Actually, I have a question regarding this excitation of the ring down. So there's no echoes, but do you know when they are excited? So are they excited?
Yeah, there should be some time delay.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's proportional to this GS.
I see.
On your conclusion side that you just had up, you had the need for strong field non-GR parameterization in the merging region. So if you have phenomenological models that fit to numerical relativity of vacuum general relativity, you can write that down as a sort of frequency series like you do for the PN.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just modify the coefficients in front of that.
Yes, you can. But then if you want to extract physics from there, then you need to know the mapping between.
But it's the same as it's the case in the higher PN, right? You're just sort of guessing what it can be.
Because for Inspiral part, we can take one theory, and then you can actually calculate these higher PN corrections. So you know the actual mapping between parameterized parameters and also actual coupling constants in your theory. Mm-hmm.
Question for about the polymer. So will you expect that there is also some sort of effective charge that will modify the spiral?
Charge. Do you know, Remy? There any charge? No.
There would be probably some weak tidal heating or some tidal deformation that might be slightly different. But from the outside, this object looks like a black hole. And in equilibrium, this object looks very much like a black hole. It's only when it's out of equilibrium that you can see the differences.
Mm-hmm. Tidal heating, I guess, would be almost negligible because it absorbs.
And when I was meeting Scott Hughes a few months ago, he was claiming that in LISA, maybe even very small, when you see the thousands of cycles and so on, then you might be able to small differences. So it's, but for, I think for LIGO, this is completely unobservable.
Okay. Oh, just a quick, because you have this delta R S equals GS times delta, but if GS is of order one or something, are you saying the actual horizon is shifted by a huge amount, but then the idea is it looks pretty much the same. Is that the idea? I mean, it's it really shifted, but all that really looks just more or less like a short, as long as it's in equilibrium.
I will explain that.
Okay.
A very last question.
Yes. So how should I be thinking about the PPE exponent there in the case where n equals minus 3 or n equals minus 4? Because that seems, it seems like it was 2n plus 5 is the exponent. Am I
2n plus
minus 5. So those are corrections that are more important at low velocity.
That's right. That's correct.
In what sense is that sort of post-Einsteinian? Where, I mean, if I want to think of that, do I want to think of that? It's hard for me to think of that as a small correction to GR if it blows up at low velocity.
Yeah, but it depends on the overall coupling constant. If the coupling constant is zero in GR, then
I can still go to lower velocities, though.
You can, but if the overall constant is zero, then it's still zero.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, so I think let's thank you.